Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're gonna learn today.
Innovate like a startup, deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's gonna be a great day.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Oh yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Lero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 152. My name is Pete Fletcher, and boy, do we have a show for you today. Now, we know we're in the middle of a global pandemic, and there are a lot of companies out there that are really stepping up to be a force for good. I mean, you see things like apparel companies that are now producing masks and other PPE. Sports teams like the New England Patriots are now using their private plane to deliver masks to key areas. And even VMware is doing a bunch, like, you know, extending discounts for work from home, Workspace ONE and other things. And so this week, we want to highlight just a few things that VMware is doing. And so we start with William Lam. William and a bunch of folks from VMware have teamed up with the project Folding at Home, and they created a Fling where you can actually contribute some of your resources towards this Folding at Home effort. Then we talked to CTO of the EUC, Brian Madden. Brian shares a bunch of really cool things that are happening in the EUC space. And then we finish with a conversation with VMware CEO Pat Gelsinger. Pat shares his thoughts, as well as what VMware is doing to be a force for good. So now I know there are a bunch of people that are doing things at VMware and even at other companies, but the goal of this week was to just share just a few stories to give you some insight into what's happening at VMware. Enjoy. All right, well, another really cool story that's coming out of VMware recently is a project that a lot of folks are getting involved with called Folding at Home. And one of the folks that's been a big part of that is William Lam, a repeat guest on the podcast. And so we want to bring William back in to discuss this with us. So William, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. How are you guys doing?
Good, man. Always good to have you. You know, it's funny that with you, you've been on several times, but for different things. We've talked to you about blogging. We've talked to you about home labs, all kinds of things. But lately, you've found yourself involved in something that's been a little bit more world reaching, if you will. It's called Folding at Home. So I wanted to ask you first, like, what exactly is Folding at Home? And then we can go into some of the things that VMware is doing specifically.
It's sometimes just curiosity and just gets the best of me. So Folding at Home is actually it's been a solution that's been around for some time now, probably a couple of decades. I don't know if you guys remember years ago, when I think the first PlayStation had been released, you know, there was the ability to run this piece of software.
The PlayStation 3, the cell yeah. processor. I actually had that. It was my like background that would just run on the TV in the background.
Right. Yeah. Visuals. So that's actually, so when I heard about this most recently, and that's actually how this whole thing kind of got started, but it's really taken a life of its own, and there's so many other people that's been contributing and kind of driving it. But it's the original Folding at Home project, and the idea is that this is really like one of the biggest distributed computing problems out there, and you're basically donating your CPU cycles for protein folding, so big distribution problems and all that, and it's research for various types of diseases and illnesses, and most recently I was actually on Twitter and I saw a couple of folks like Amanda Blevins and others talk about Folding at Home for helping solve some of the challenges with COVID.
Yeah.
And I started to see kind of like this team VMware, because you can create these teams, join up, collaborate with other folks, and you basically donate some of your CPU cycles, right? Especially, during nights and weekends. And you can run it on any platform. And I saw folks that were starting to use it, just like on their Macs and some home systems. And I kind of noticed people were kind of asking questions of like how to get started, how to get set up. And I kind of asked just like a really random question. I didn't really think much of it at all. I just said, hey, I got it working on VMware Photon OS, just kind of playing around with it, started to contribute some of my cycles and just asked the question of like, hey, what if I created like a tiny little virtual blinds that kind of made the setup, as trivial as possible? Would anybody be interested in that? And to be honest, I was not expecting much response, right? I hadn't heard about Folding for like 20 plus years now. And it ended up being something that was actually quite interesting. So in the span of 72 hours or so, kind of from the initial idea, and then I had a lot of folks kind of contribute to the idea and to the implementation, VMware ended up releasing a VMware Fling that bundled the Folding at Home software into, Photon OS virtual appliance. It's less than 1 gigabyte, super easy to deploy. And it's kind of like spiraled out. We had just so many folks start to contribute their resources to a really awesome cause.
Okay. So somebody that can just download this Fling. They can install it on their MacBook Pro or whatever, and they can, it'll already have all the configuration and all of the linking to be part of the team VMware. And then they're able to donate some of their compute resources to help this cause of understanding the folding of protons to help with the coronavirus. Is that right?
Yep. Yeah. Folding of proteins. And it's optimized, you know, for your CPUs. And so you can download a small version. So I made a couple of enhancements. And so depending on how much virtual CPUs you can allocate to your VMs, it'll go in and set that up. So it'll optimize it for you, because a lot of folks want to help out. They've got the computing resources, but not necessarily the background of the application, including myself. It's been some time since I've even touched it. So I actually learned quite a bit from some folks that are a little bit more familiar with it. And it's supported on vSphere, obviously. But we also made it work on standalone ESXi hosts. So if you don't have vCenter, we fully support that. It also runs on Mac and Fusion. Lots of documentation on how to get started. And it's not just donating your CPU cycles. You know, that's certainly the most easiest way. But from a effectiveness and resource standpoint, you can also donate GPUs. Those are going to give you obviously a little bit more quote-unquote points to the system, but yeah, also bigger workloads. You know, they're really designed for these kind of high scale types of problems to solve. And so a lot of folks have been taking their gaming rigs, putting vSphere on it, and starting to deploy these workloads on there. And that's nice. Really been helping with the cause. Yeah,
that's pretty awesome. And so any results as of yet? I know there's I did see there was like Wavefront is having a whole a COVID-19.wavefront.com has like a full dashboard of results. And so how has this turned out?
Yeah, well, it's been out for a couple of weeks now. You know, the initial idea to solution took about 3 days. It's under 2.5 weeks. And it really has, you know, spiraled out in so many different ways. You know, if I think back on sort of like some of the impact, you know, we had one of the Wavefront co-founder who had created this dashboard, right, that basically looks at the Fling, at the results from the folding at home. So they basically publish your results. So as a contributor, you put in your name, your team. And so there's these kind of points. And, you know, it's kind of like friendly competition. And to be honest, you know, there was like a team VMware created like ages ago, but we were nowhere on the map, like literally, like you can think of, you know, it was nowhere on the map. And all of a sudden, you know, we're tracking into the thousands, and right now we're about to rank 93 globally.
Ooh!
So it's like it's pretty insane. Just see, you know, how much we've moved, and I think we were even overtook some of the larger teams most recently as well too. So
well, my office is actually a little warm right now because my CPU and GPU are both getting slammed on my gaming PC here on my desk. So
nice.
I'm doing my part.
Right. Yeah. And so it's just so many folks, you know, donating their time and resources. And so, you know, the original core team, you know, Amanda Blevins has been really driving this from the office CTO, helped push this through the Flings. Like this is actually one of the quickest Fling that I've ever seen released, I think, like within 72 hours. We were doing legal reviews in the middle of the night, security reviews to get this through the door. Usually it takes about 3 to 4 weeks if anybody's gone through the Fling process. So I think this one has been one that's really kind of excelled. So man has really been driving that. As I've been developing the appliance and building that out, you know, I had support from like folks like Dean Lewis who built out some really fantastic documentation. So not only how to get started, some optimization, some best practices that they've learned. Sean Messi did this whole document on GPU, so we can actually support vGPU using NVIDIA Grid. So he's got some documentation, some best practices around that, because that's actually one really common question that we get from folks who are contributing both internal at VMware, but also externally from customers and partners.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Mike McDonough, he's been doing a lot of testing and scale, helping me test the solution. And he's also shared a bunch of automation scripts. And that's been going through like various folks like OneCloud. So internally VMware IT, you know, they're like, hey, we want to help out. You know, how can we do this? And so that's really been the crazy part, is to see how far this has spread it. I mean, I literally just got an email today from our friends over at Dell EMC. You know, they were contributing some VX racks, and they just got the security approval to actually start to deploy this out at a much wider fleet scale, especially for when they're not using it during weekdays and especially on weekends and all that. So I think we might see, hopefully the numbers, again, our ranking going lower.
Yeah.
And the really cool part too is also just the support from the community, right? There was a lot of support internally at VMware, but we weren't sure, you know, how this might translate to customers. You know, given the situation we're in, it's totally understanding that there's a lot on people's mind. But there was really a rallying around the community, not just the VMware community, our partners, but also a lot of our vendors. You know, I saw some folks over at Microsoft kind of take the idea. They kind of did their own thing based on the original concept. I think Cohesity is also doing something. And I think we even have some folks over in Nutanix also supporting the effort, right? And so this really is a big global community effort.
Nice.
And just continually seeing the number of folks in the teams. I think now we're up to like maybe 1,200 plus people. And like I said, we were nowhere in the map.
Yeah.
You know, there are a couple of handful of people. And it's just kind of crazy to see, you know, in a very short amount of time, you know, the leaps and bounds that we've been able to do, just all kind of rallying against a really great cause.
Well, yeah, William, one thing I noticed was that this is the most downloaded Fling of all time, and it just came out. So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's only the quickest Fling to get out there, but it's just certainly one that's been really well adopted, both internal and external as well. The other crazy stat too, that I was reading an article the other day, because this has actually been making headlines as well, is that the number of people contributing to Folding at Home efforts has just jumped like 100x fold. I think they said that at the beginning of this year, you know, they had roughly about 30,000 people contributing their systems. But within, I think just within the April timeframe, so a very short amount of time, they had over a million plus devices contributing to their, to this overall service. And from a computing standpoint, I think the article was saying something like if there's like 1.5 exaflops. I don't even know what an exaflop is, but they're comparing this like this is like 10 times faster than IBM and a couple other supercomputers in the world. And so we have all this computing power, right? You know, working together to break down these proteins and to better understand some of these diseases, because it's not just COVID, actually. They're looking at a number of other diseases. And so
Alzheimer's really great and some other stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And the funny thing is, because I think John was mentioning that his house was getting a little warm. And if you turn this on in your vSphere environment, and we had a couple of customers not realize it, you know, it spins up quick. And one thing that I thought was really interesting and pretty impressed with in terms of like how some of the customers have taken this is that they're like, this is a fantastic tool at burning in your hardware, right? You normally run, you know, MEM test or some other CPU test. And just imagine just running this appliance, it will definitely stress out your hardware. You can, of course, put limits on it.
Mm-hmm.
And not only are you basically testing out your hardware before you put it into production, but you're also doing some good at the same time. So I've seen a number of folks just say, hey, you know what, this is my go-to tool now. If I basically need to stress test CPU, I don't know if there's something equivalent for like memory that does some good, but I think certainly, you know, if you need a nice stress tool, works out of the box, I think this is certainly one that I thought that was kind of interesting that somebody kind of came to that conclusion.
Well, and particularly with the GPUs, that could be useful because if you're using dense GPU configs and those racks for like VDI nodes or things like that, you can hit some thermal barriers that you didn't realize you were going to hit. And so being able to instantly max out all the GPUs is actually pretty good for making sure you're not going to throw a breaker in production for that rack or blow out your cooling, which are the two things that people don't always realize are potentially a problem until they to actually start churning those things.
Yeah. William, I could see this being like a benchmark for like, you know, CPU, memory or whatever in a home lab. You know, this could, you literally could be doing some benchmarking by the work that you're actually generating with this.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's thing that, you know, you can turn it off when you want to, turn it on when you're interested in. But it's just, you know, we built this so that, you know, folks want to get started and want to support TM VMware, fantastic. But the way the appliance was built, it was actually very agnostic, right? And so if you wanted to contribute, you know, through your own team, I know many other organizations have their own kind of like team. So it's great to see that. You just change the property in the deployment flow. I think some people assume that, hey, this appliance is like VMware centric.
Yeah.
And although it is using our OS and we've included the Folding at Home software, it actually is not specific to our team, right? I just kind of optimize the input field. And so you can also change it and support other causes if you wanted to too. So I think it's certainly a handy tool to be aware of, and it's free and easy to use. So I think that was kind of like an unintended consequence of how this was going to get consumed. I was really just thinking about like, hey, could I make this just easier for people who want to support this? And
yeah,
didn't think too much about it. And really now seeing where it's going and we've just been getting massive uptakes on all different fronts and all that. So I think you'll probably be hearing more news about this in the coming weeks and all that as well. But yeah, super, super cool to see where this is going and really the efforts of a team. It's really not a single individual pushing this through.
Yeah, well, this is a global problem that needs, I think, help from everybody to contribute and solve. I can't think of a better thing to contribute than helping understand ways to find a cure for this, or at least to find some sort of vaccine. So yeah, very, very worthy effort that we're doing here. Foldinghome.org is the main site to go to. The Fling itself is on flings.vmware.com. John, anything else?
So the next thing I need to, since I'm on this crazy variable power plan, is I need to find a way to tap the Gritty API, check the spot price of power, and then dynamically spin up and down against when like power gets cheap or the temperature in my house is getting too cold and I need to warm it. So there's more automation that can be done here. I'll watch this space. So
funny enough, Mike already put some automation out there, and in fact, that's how he's rolling the fleet out across some of the VCDs environments and all that. So yeah, you can definitely look at a number of parameters, maybe look at usage of your infrastructure, and when it's low, go ahead and deploy these things out there. In fact, I even suggest that you can even do link clones, right? Because ultimately, it's very little storage. Memory is anywhere from like 1 gigabyte to 4 gigabytes, so very not memory intensive at all. It's all very CPU heavy, and so you can imagine scaling this up and down based on your workload. So I've seen some folks basically say, "Hey, here's a schedule where things are not running in the data center. I will basically do a bunch of clones." And because it's very lightweight, it's got the OVF properties, it's very, very easy to do that using PowerCLI or any other automation tool, and then scale it back down during business hours. So I've seen a lot of people take advantage of some of the scripts that Mike and team have been writing and contributing in the GitHub repo. So there's also that detailed in the FAQ. Like, we have a very detailed FAQ. It's funny because
I'm reading this FAQ right now, because I was reading how to install the NVIDIA GPUs. And this is good. There's pretty screenshots. This is really idiot proof.
Yeah, like I said, it's like 72 hours, but like it almost felt like a product release. Like just the scrutiny of security. I mean, we had one of the security, the legal folks and all that, and it felt like it was like a team of like, hey, we're releasing a product. And it was just funny because we're just doing it for fun, but just like the amount of content that's been put out by like Dean, Sean, Mike, and Amanda, it really is impressive. Like if you didn't think too much, you might have thought that this is like a VMware product, basically.
Yeah.
Well, and William, since you're already on first name basis with legal anyways, I'm sure that went pretty quick. So.
you're actually doing something that is supported. It's nailing it.
Very good. All right, William, listen, keep us updated. I want to see as VMware starts to rank even better. I'll be curious to see, and we'll certainly update the podcast notes, but keep us posted, man. And thanks for all you do for this effort.
Thanks, man. Stay safe, guys.
All right, John, as you know, things have definitely changed as it pertains to work from home. Lot more people are working from home, and so VDI has become pretty popular. Some have said it might even be the year of VDI. You know, did it take a pandemic?
I'm going to interrupt you to groan. Like, not the year of VDI again.
Did it take a global pandemic to finally have the year of VDI? Well, we're going to get the answer because we've got Brian Madden on to talk about that. Brian, welcome back.
Guys. Thank you so much for the invite. I feel like we talked about, is any year going to be the year of VDI last time we did this podcast?
We did.
So yeah, let's have that conversation again.
So yeah, short answer. Did this global pandemic actually inspire the year of VDI?
No. Next question.
I'll accept that. I'll definitely accept that one.
I mean, it's funny because people have been tweeting me nonstop for the past month. Like, dude, Brian, is it finally the year of VDI? And I wrote an article last year saying, hey, is 2019 still not the year of VDI? And the short answer is VDI is one delivery mechanism for one type of end user computing application. And so VDI is great technology. It's been great technology for the past 15 years. But I think if you declare a year of VDI, that to me suggests everyone's like, oh, so VDI is the way now? And I'm like, no. VDI is awesome for some percentage of your users. You know, we talked about this probably last time. It's like the alternator in your car.
Yeah.
It's very important. But like EUC is a car, and you can deliver SaaS apps, Windows management, local apps, Mac, Windows, iOS, Android, VDI. VDI is absolutely part of the conversation.
Yeah.
But it is not the whole conversation. I'm sorry, this is a soapbox issue for me. I just want to have one little point. Everyone's like, ha, 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 Brian, is it the year of VDI? Dude, I wrote a book called The VDI Delusion.
I own a copy of that book. Like,
this dude question. Is not declaring the year of VDI. Not my thing.
My favorite line from that book was like the hierarchy of the IT like purchasers and groups. And then at the bottom, you have like the desktop team. And it's like, look, these people have very little power, very little budget.
Oh, yeah.
If VDI is driven by them, they're the only poor, you know, Yahoos who actually understand the apps. You're going to have problems because of all the infrastructure needs above them. But then below the Windows desktop team, you have the Mac support team. And I'm like, wow, that is cold, savage, and probably true for enterprise importance.
Yeah. If he's listening, that is a Gabe Knuth joke. So that book I actually co-wrote with Gabe Knuth and Jack Madden. And that I remember that 100%. And that was 100% a Gabe Knuth joke.
Nice.
Okay, that makes sense. Although to be fair, as a Mac user, I never call support. So if you're having to call the Mac support line at work,
right.
God bless you.
Yeah, a Mac is what we bought my grandmother because she was 1,000 years old, and she could use it. If you need support on a Mac, Like, you're not getting first string team. I'm just saying.
Yeah, you've got bigger problems. So yeah, the real question that was actually just that was just to trigger you. The real question is more about. I'm really curious what you've been up to these past couple of weeks. I know I'm sure. I mean, I've read some of your blogs. You know, I know your level of activity has probably picked up a lot. So I'm curious. What are your thoughts? Like, what has really changed for you? What are your conversations? What's changed for you as it pertains to end user compute?
Well, the short answer is like what we do just became very relevant instantaneously. So for the past few years, I mean, my whole career, I've been fighting like, hey, it's EUC. It's, we're cool. You know, yeah. Like open the door for us. And people are just like, cloud.
Servers rule, desktops drool. Go
yes,
away.
Yes, thank you. Exactly. And now all of a sudden everyone wants a piece of Brian.
Yeah.
And so real, but that's been it. And it's, you know, to the point, like one of the blogs, everyone is recognizing that if you had put the building blocks in place to build a more flexible EUC environment, then you are in great shape today. If you did not do that, then you are not in great shape. And there's a lot of things like, I'm gonna take a perfect example here. There's a lot of stuff we do within EUC that quote, doesn't matter. Like I talk about modern management and it's like, oh, you can have cloud-based management instead of using like legacy SCCM and peer, all this kind of stuff. And people are like, yeah, like I get it. It's theoretically better. It doesn't matter. Now everyone's working from home. And when I tell people, man, we're recording this on April 9th. Patch Tuesday has not happened yet in the pandemic.
Ooh.
Right? Right? How does Patch Tuesday work?
I'm just thinking, because I had this problem when I was in college, they pointed all of our desktops for whatever reason at a local SUSE repository that was on the LAN. And then when we all went home for the summer, none of us got patches because we couldn't talk to the update server.
Dude, thank you. You took what was going to be a 5-minute diatribe by me and turned it into one sentence. Perfect. That's the problem.
Yeah, I made a lot of beer that summer fixing that for everyone, removing viruses. Like, it was pretty bad.
Yeah, because like, every admin who's worth the salt is like, oh, these patches are 500 megs. I don't want to download 500 megs times all my users. I'm going to set up a patching server. It's going to download once in the corporate network. Now I'm going to use like branch cache or peer-to-peer or whatever, like LAN-based distribution.
All those tools are working against us now. Like all the legacy management optimization everyone did. I mean, it's bad enough you can't get GPO when you're roaming out into the unknown with your laptop. But, you know, typically the GPO didn't change monthly.
Right. And here's a good point. Hey, all of your laptops are getting their Patch Tuesday patches from your local LAN-based server.
Yep.
You want to change them to say, hey, get them directly from the cloud, from Microsoft. Don't use a server. How do you do that? GPO. How do you update a GPO when a user is remote? They better be logging into that VPN, logging into that domain controller, and they better wait for that half-hour machine policy to refresh. And if it doesn't happen, they ain't getting that new GPO, which means they're downloading that patch across your corporate VPN connection, which is already so bottlenecked today.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be broken from everyone pulling their updates over the VPN, so it's not like they'll be able to get to the GPO. So,
and a lot of companies, it gets even worse because they tie into their security policies for the VPN. Like, hey, you are not allowed on the VPN unless you have the most recent patches. Well, if the patches are coming out quickly, that's fine. But what happens if you've got like your first deployment ring, which is maybe going to set 24 hours to deploy there, then my 24 hours later, I have my second deployment ring, 24 hours later, I have my third deployment ring. Well, we are able to hit that pacing because we have very efficient LAN-based, you know, distribution of updates. But now that everyone is all over creation and they're shoving all this down through our VPN and who even knows what's getting what, I think there's a very real possibility that users just cannot get on the VPN because they couldn't get patched fast enough. And the VPN is now not letting them on because they do not have the latest patches. And what are you going to do?
Yeah, it's like you're trying to fill a swimming pool with a straw here.
Yeah, you got 4 days to figure it out, by the way.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Good luck.
So yeah, lots have happened, lots going on. I know Horizon 7, you know, is a popular topic for you, I'm sure. There's been lots of updates from VMware coming through. I mean, there's been extended licenses for various things like Workspace ONE, some of the trials. You know, we talked to William Lamb about folding at home. Lots of efforts coming from VMware. But what specifically have you been focusing on aside from Patch Tuesday? But as it pertains to Horizon,
the
7.
Patch Tuesday apocalypse is coming.
Yeah, I feel like I'm putting in for a vacation day next week on Tuesday. Yeah,
Monday night, done.
Yeah, exactly. I will be back in 24 hours or never, depending on how things go. You know, so Horizon 7, that's our on-prem version of Horizon. The biggest thing is, so first of all, you're right. We've taken almost every trial product we have that has a 30-day license, we've extended to 90 days with some footnotes. Like, if we're still in this situation 90 days from now, we'll figure it out. Like, just get up and running, do what you have to do. And we're doing things also, like, we had terms in our evaluations where you're not allowed to use it for production, and we're updating some of that language to just help people just get up and running as fast as they possibly can, which is important. But Horizon 7, you know, the most interesting thing, so Horizon 7, that's our on-prem version of Horizon, which we update quarterly. So we're on 7.12 right now. We've got, 3 years of Horizon 7 being out. The biggest thing we're seeing with Horizon 7, there's two things. The first one is, you can use Horizon to connect back to a physical PC, a physical Windows 10 PC.
Yes, put the Horizon agent on there. Now, there's some caveats. I think you don't get PC over IP unless you had a Teradici card, which no one ever did. And then you didn't get H.264 unless you have Enterprise Windows, right?
My friend, you got old data.
Oh, yeah.
It's all
been
fixed.
First of all, PC over IP is not a thing anymore. PC over IP... Now, it is from Teradici, the company that made it. So PC over IP, back in the old days, like before I was here, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, VMware, you know, Citrix had their ICA HGX protocol. VMware needed
the protocol wars.
They didn't have one. They just licensed PC over IP. PC over IP is fine, but we at VMware needed like to own the protocol, because when we are looking with our customers and saying, oh, they need XYZ features, we go back to Teradici and they're like, hey, we need these features. And Teradici says, yes, you are one of 7,000 customers of ours. Get in line. We'll do them when we do them.
Yeah.
So we needed our own protocol. We built our own protocol. It is Blast. It is fantastic. Blast has been updated. The Blast team, especially in Horizon 7.12, it's very solid. GPU, multiple monitor, like Blast is fantastic. PC over IP still exists in the product, because there are people who bought those zero clients of PC over IP back in the day, and we don't want to like screw them by just cutting off their access.
Fair. But please don't buy more zero clients. Please.
No
don't
one's
buy more.
Using PC over IP with Horizon in a net new environment. So, the bigger point here is that yes, VMware Horizon is made to connect back to your, you know, Windows 10 VMs or your RDS VMs in the cloud or on-prem, whatever. But there's nothing technically stopping you from installing the virtual desktop agent on a physical Windows machine and then using Horizon to connect back to the physical Windows machine.
We used to do that for physical boxes that had like a proprietary weird controller card, like on a manufacturing line.
Totally. And it's fine. It works great. And so the thing is, there's really nothing stopping you from doing that. It's just the product, that's not a big use case. The product wasn't really designed for that. And so what happened was when this whole pandemic happened and everyone, you know, you have an office that empties out and all of a sudden everyone is working from home, you're like, oh, hey, it'd be cool if we could actually remotely access our desktop PCs that are now in our dark office.
Yeah.
And so some of our customers were like, oh, let's just use Horizon for this. We'll install a virtual desktop agent on those Windows machines. And if it is a Windows 10 enterprise machine, it's full blast. If it has a GPU, we will use the GPU. It doesn't need a GPU, but we'll do it. You can do RDP as well, but we'll do full blast, full high resolution GPU.
Okay, so that's what the Windows edition was for, was getting access to the GPU offload for the blast capabilities?
It requires Windows 10 Enterprise in order to get Blast to connect, which everyone should have Windows 10 Enterprise if you're in the business. I think it's not even technically licensed. I don't think you're allowed to use Windows 10 Home or Professional for companies anyway. But I do. The point is it's Windows 10 Enterprise. Now, that said, so installing the VDA on these machines in a dark office is fine. But now we ran into issues like, oh, what if the machine's firewall is not set up properly to... like get the Blast protocol to come out or the multimedia sideband or anything like that. What if
firewall by GPO hell? Oh God.
Right. What if the power saving, what if it turns off and goes to sleep? Right. Ooh. So a couple of our folks, Andrew Morgan and Chris Halstead, two of our colleagues in VMware EUC, wrote a bunch of like helper utilities that are on GitHub. They're open source. And there's a couple of utilities that they wrote. One of them is a little script that will automatically install the VMware VDA agent on a physical machine, and it will go through and like set the firewall settings, it'll set up the energy saving, it sets up all that kind of stuff. And then Andy Morgan, he also wrote a tool that does wake on LAN. So we can do wake on LAN integration with
mesh,
so when
service,
the user
right?
clicks on it. Yeah, and like it's just like if you click
on... Oh, so for the connection server, we'll go send the wake up request. Wow.
Right, if the machine's off, turn it on. So we did that, but Wake on LAN only goes on a local subnet. So then Andy wrote a new version of his tool that can actually, you can set like a Wake on LAN gateway on each subnet. And if you need to wake up a machine that's not on your subnet, it'll like talk to its gateway, which is just a little service it runs, or you can actually run it on a Raspberry Pi. You can kind of do anything. So my point is that we realize that like emergency,
yeah,
people are trying to get to use Horizon 7 to connect back to physical machines, which in theory should work, but there's some logistical things that didn't make sense. So we've got folks like fixing those problems.
And so now people
are using Windows. They're using Horizon 7 to connect back to physical machines.
Well, this is just a lot better than having a VPN and RDP like a savage and hope that no one unplugged or it didn't turn off. Like,
and that's a good point because, you know, if you're using Horizon, you don't need a VPN. I mean, you can use a VPN, but the, you know, the Blast protocol is all SSL encrypted. We have these unified access gateways. It's a component of, it's just like an SSL concentrator.
It's in the DMZ reverse proxy.
Yeah. And, but what's cool is like, it's purpose built for, you know, doing Blast and Horizon and all this kind of stuff. I mean, it's used in a bunch of areas in Workspace ONE, but the point is you don't need to burn your expensive VPN connections, your expensive licenses, your expensive bandwidth.
Right.
You can set up a UAG, have that front, you know, thousands of, or build a bunch of them and load balance everything. You can have that front thousands of users, and now you're freeing up your VPN. And so that's what we're telling people, like, you can do Horizon, you don't need a VPN, you can do Wake on LAN. Horizon 7, another feature that came out maybe within the past year is our, what do they call it? Like session collaboration, I think, or session sharing.
Oh, and screen sharing, yeah.
Yeah, and this, it's actually, this is a, like a very legit feature, where as a user, if I'm using Horizon Desktop, I literally right click on the icon in the system tray and then do like collaborate. And then it pops up a thing that looks like Zoom and it says enter based on email address, enter based on email, IM, Slack, copy the address. And I can actually like, I can be on a Horizon session and I can copy my session and just give you a URL and you click on it. Even if you don't have the Horizon agent installed, it'll, or the Horizon client installed, it'll connect via the web H.26 or the HTML5 agent.
Yep.
And then you're in my session with me. And I can give off keyboard control. But what's cool, so it's like Zoom session sharing, but it's not using Zoom. So all the security you've already vetted, the protocols, the ports, the firewalls, we can actually do 10-to-1 sharing on the same session. It's using Real Blast. It's using the GPUs. It's like, it's pretty legit. Mm-hmm. And like the session sharing Horizon, it's a right click. And it's been a feature for a year. And now we're just like, by the way, did you know you can right click and share? And people were like, oh my God, this just works.
This is
well,
perfect.
I love these kind of features that would have been either, you know, niche or like, oh, maybe it solved one. We acquired some company to do this for this one use case or like the manage physical PCs. I kind of wondered if that was a vestigial feature, you know, like, mm-hmm. well, we created it a long time ago and I'm sure no one had looked at it.
Yeah.
And then suddenly these are
critical. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the opposite. What is a vestigial feature where like you have a little nub on your back and all of a sudden, like 5 years later, you have a full tail? Yeah. That's what we're doing, right? Because it really was like it was one of these things where the agent installing VDA on a physical machine, like I guess that would work, and it really was. Wow, this is actually fine. There's only a few rough edges. Mm-hmm. We can fix the rough edges in like 2 days of coding. Let's do it. And these are, you know, they're on GitHub. It's open source, so all these little rough edges we're fixing, it just goes to GitHub and other people in the world. If you want a feature, like add it, mm-hmm. and we'll merge it back in. It's pretty great stuff.
So I've got all these links. And we're going to be putting these on the show notes of the podcast. Lots of things going on for EUC that people need to know about. So especially in these times. But there's so much more to talk about. But I think we're going to dedicate an entire episode, Brian, with you. I want to talk. You've been writing some great blog posts. So we're going to do that. And so for those that are in the world of VDI and EUC in general, stay tuned for an upcoming episode with Brian where we literally break down some of these bigger topics. Brian, thank you so much for joining us, man.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Well, joining us now is CEO of VMware, Pat Gelsinger. Pat, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, thanks, Pete. Thanks, John. Always a pleasure to be on Virtually Speaking.
Yeah, I see you're coming to us from Pat Gelsinger headquarters there in California.
here we go. Where it happens, my home studies.
Yeah. Yes, I'm curious. How is life changing for you? I know it's changing for everybody. I mean, we're all changing our work from home habits. How has that been in your home?
Well, I came to my wife last night, Sunday night, and I said to her, I says, I think I'm going to work from home tomorrow, honey. And she looks at me, she says, okay. Right? So we're adjusting, and it's fairly easy for us. You know, we're empty nesters, so, right, you know, we have a big house, so it's fairly easy for her to go to her corner, I go to my corner, and, you know, I got good bandwidth on the hill here, but, you know, like I was telling somebody the other day, I says, I just need a hug, right? Come on. But we're doing well, and I'm just delighted for how well the company is doing. And, You know, we went from maybe 4,000 or 5,000 people who worked from home regularly to 31,000. And, you know, that's pretty dramatic. And their IT systems have functioned almost flawlessly. One of my favorite little stories is on February 28th, we were planning our sales kickoff, right, physically in Las Vegas, followed by Singapore, followed by Barcelona in short succession. And over the weekend, we turned it into a virtual event for over 15,000 people, and it went flawlessly.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you're just adjusting, right? Changes that might have taken months, quarters, years are now happening in weekends. Right? And, you know, just we're all showing up and working this way. And, you know, that sort of leads into one of my bigger thoughts in this period of time is we will never work, live, learn, play, worship the same way. This will fundamentally change what we do and how we do all of those things in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. We're all learning new habits and learning what is the new normal for sure. Matter of fact, I heard a story recently. I've heard a lot of good stories about how various customers are using, you know, our digital workspace programs, you know, whether it's, you know, EUC, whether it's Workspace ONE. I heard a great EUC story the other day where this customer had to, you know, they were in the process. They had a small VDI environment, but they had to very rapidly change their environment into some very large scale to accommodate older customers. And so what would normally take months of a POC and
careful planning and staging and testing and make sure all the stakeholders have signed off.
Yeah.
It seems like the speed has changed.
Yeah.
Well, we're seeing those stories all over the place, and I'm thrilled by them. Like one banking example, you know, 9 months of dreadful, hard salt mine labor, and we got them to 15,000 devices. Sure. And every next deployment or use case, you know, there was some little thing until this testing was done. And, you know, just every piece of it was just like, man, what a painful project. And then in a week, we went from 15,000 to well over 100,000. Bam. Wow. Right. You know, so 9 months to 15, a weekend to get to well over 100,000. And some of them, you know, have just been incredible, like one of the big first responders in U.S. government has gone from 5,000 mobile managed Workspace ONE devices to over 150,000 in a week. We had lots of hospitals who essentially had no remote workforce, no telemedicine, no ability for doctors to dial in. And just examples all across like Indiana University Health System, Texas Health, MD Anderson, all of these are sort of like things that couldn't happen now are just happening within a few days. And a number of these, and you know, one of the reasons I believe many of these changes will be persistent is a lot of the regulatory or other legal bound barriers to such just came down overnight, right? You know, who'd have thunk that a Oklahoma patient could actually receive care from a Texas doctor?
Yeah.
Right. You know, that's like, that's like crossing boundaries that no, you know, and all of a sudden, bam, it's just happening. And this kind of things, I think, are just ushering in such speed of execution. You know, we built a new wing with Vanderbilt in a parking garage. Right. And needed to be Workspace ONE enabled as well as SD-WAN to get enough bandwidth into this environment. And now it's a new wing of the hospital for COVID patients. So these things, I think, are really quite exciting to see happening across so many different domains, countries, states around the world.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, it's nice to hear that we can go fast, but also do that with while still maintaining compliance and security to a degree. Like some of the compliance we obviously need to get rid of. It's great that I can now FaceTime my doctor and, you know, have that conversation. But it's also good to see that we've got the tooling here to help kind of carry that forward.
Yeah. Yeah. And I absolutely agree with that. And that, you know, we've been architecting like Workspace ONE, as we said, consumer simple, enterprise secure for many years. And now these projects are going forward rapidly, but in the way that really does meet all of the enterprise requirements. And, you know, I had a conversation with the CIO of Comcast, and they had almost no work from home. And all of a sudden everybody was working from home. He says, boy, we were planning that project for almost a year and we implemented it in a week. Maybe we should do all of them that way, right? And, you know, just the fact that so much, you know, like you said at the beginning, Pete, you know, just this nitty gritty kind of planning and so on. Do it, right? Because these are reliable, proven tools and technologies. And hey, maybe we got a few things that we got to polish up after the fact.
Oh yeah.
But you know, 9 months versus a week. Boom. Right. And that kind of speed of execution is, you know, to us, you know, one is thrilling, but second is it proves the underlying value of the technology that we have. We can do this. We know we can. Right. Yeah. And it's going to be secure, managed, scalable, resilient.
It's interesting to see if that lesson learned is something that comes out of this in the future for future deals or future considerations. Like this really doesn't have to take 6 months.
That's right. That's right. Well, we got the long road, or we're just going to build it and do it, right? Which one would you like?
Well, and it's nice though to see though that it's causing IT departments, which are sometimes distant from line of business, to become more integrated. And I'm also seeing line of business, like my wife's she's a medical researcher, she's a doctor. She's talking to me about APIs, which 2 months ago, you know, she couldn't have spelled API, but now she's deeply worried about how to tie in a database and things like that. It seems like the walls around IT are breaking down, which is, it's a new operational model.
Well, you know, and as you go to all of these different industries where, you know, how important was the IT manager at a hospital, right? Or, you know, I do a lot of work with charities, with churches. You know, as I was talking to one of my senior pastors of a large church, I says, who's the most important person on your staff? Your head of IT. Right? It was never the case before. All of a sudden, that's right. That is my most important person.
Oh, it's interesting to see things like that, church services scrambling to do, you know, events and all of a sudden leveraging the same tools that we have become so familiar with, you know, especially for us work from home people. Like this truly has not changed almost at all for me. You know, I, like yourself, Pat, I'm an empty nester. So my wife and I, you know, she has to do some remote school, but for me, I'm still working from home. Life from a professional perspective is we've got the tools. I'm using Workspace ONE. I'm using Zoom and Slack and a couple of other things that make my life just, you know, I'm as productive as I normally am. So, but it's fun to see these other people that are now starting to take advantage of these really awesome tools that are out there.
Yeah. And in a number of cases, I truly believe we'll be more productive. And you know, some of that is like, I don't know, I could go count, but I think I'm doing about 15 customer calls this week, right? Yeah, you know, boy, you know, how many weeks in California would have I done 15 customer calls in a week?
Yeah.
You know, boy, you know, I'm just touching a lot more customers. And, you know, I was on the, I had a call with the CIO of HHS, you know, Health and Human Services in the US. You know, there, you know, underneath them is CDC and, you know, NIH is, you know, this is a big guy, right? And, you know, here he is, he had his t-shirt on, he had a baseball hat on, and, you know, we're talking about what they're doing. And so I'm like, well, that was sort of fun. You know, and instead of taking, you know, I mean, if I was meeting with him normally, would I make a special trip to Washington to do that? You bet I would.
Yeah.
Right. I'd fly out there. I'd be face to face with them. I'd have my tie on. And, you know, now, boom, right. We're having a very productive hour conversation that kicked off in a whole bunch of different project things. So in many ways, I think we'll actually find ways to be more productive. Also, you know, maybe people don't need to commute 4 hours, you know, right. 2 hours in and 2 hours out. Maybe we can lower the carbon footprint as a result. Maybe we don't need as many office spots and offices go more from, you know, hotels for offices to gathering places. You know, I think there's just a lot of these things where we're actually going to say, it's not just different, it's better.
I agree. I think there's a lot to be learned from this situation. You know, obviously, I'm hoping that everything turns out, you know, for humanity in general. There's a lot of unknowns today. Mm-hmm. You know, but from a technical perspective, I think this is going to be interesting to look back and see all of the lessons learned and see how people change the way they do business. I think I've heard you refer to it as a black swan event. You know, just things are just changing.
Yeah, it was humorous. I used that terminology in a post I did. And then some says, well, is it really a black swan? And in fact, the author of that book, Taleb, said, no, it's a white swan because it was predicted. And so it says, well, I think that misses the point because, you know, there were people that predicted 9/11, but everything changed after it happened. You didn't have the economic power, the political will, or the social capacity to make the change. And even though you might have had a few people arguing we could have a pandemic, until it occurs, the economy, the politics, right, the social capacity don't have the will to go make those changes. that's what's changed. And in that sense, yeah, I think it is a black swan event, and we will never do these things the same way again. It truly will change us forever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so VMware in general has been doing a lot of cool things, you know, internally, you know, for the folks that work at VMware, they've been seeing the stuff come out. So, doubling our match for our donations, which I think is fantastic. I think every VMware employee should definitely be taking advantage of that.
Oh, please, yeah. Please. And we only had, I'm either thrilled by the opportunity or annoyed, right? Because we only had about 15% of our workforce taking advantage of the match today, right? Why isn't that 95%?
Right.
And the fact that we've doubled it now means mostly those that the 15% or so that were taking advantage of it are taking advantage of it twice as much. But I want everybody to do it because the best local needs, right? The things in your community better than I. And I'm sitting, as CEO, I don't know the things that can most affect you wherever you might be in the nation or in the world. And that's what excites me about it. And literally, this puts tens of millions of dollars in your hands, right, to be able to go apply to the most appropriate place.
Makes perfect sense. Yeah. So VMware doing lots of good things, like I said, internally. But what are some of the things that VMware is doing externally in this time?
Well, first and foremost is we are a critical provider for the critical providers. So the most powerful thing we do is make sure every hospital, every first responder, every essential infrastructure provider on the planet is up and running. And I'm thrilled, right? Just story after story is running in. Probably the number one has been acceleration of Workspace ONE deployments, VDI deployments, Horizon deployments associated with that. But we're going to make sure our customers are fully enabled, where we are going to be the best company that they've worked with across the many choices they have. And then, from that, then it says, okay, we have to make sure that we're now preparing for this journey. This is a marathon, not a sprint. We're going to be seeing and feeling the impacts of this for a while. And, as I've said to customers, as well as our employees, you need to set a pace because all of a sudden, the weeks have no end, right? There is no boundaries of when the day starts or when it ends, right? And all of a sudden you have to set boundaries and take walks and refresh and nourish yourself, because if you're going to be supporting our customers for the coming months, you need to be encouraged and energized to go do so. And then there's so many of our other products and technologies, whether it's SD-WAN for bandwidth, whether it's capabilities of the cloud emerging, whether it's coming back and saying, oh, we really do need to secure your environment. I'll tell you, I was just so dismayed. There was the HHS had its biggest DDoS attack ever, right? It's like,
oh, wow.
Man, you're just like, this is cruel beyond belief. And the
right.
greatest health crisis of our day, some idiot out there, right, is putting that attack. Similarly, Red Cross had a large, right, attack on it.
Wow.
And I'm just like, really? The Red Cross? Right. And there's this enormous security attack on it. So, many of the fundamentals, we have to be stepping in and helping them in this environment. And those are just two examples that that are public examples right now. But we got to do the basics really well. Got to be deployed, got to be managed, got to be secure as well. And as we then look to the future, it's continuing to deliver our products. And, the engineering teams, the customer and support teams got to keep that engine of innovation going forward. And I'm thrilled, we've just GA'd vSphere, vSAN, NSX, PKS, Tanzu, right? These are enormous pieces of software.
Oh, yeah.
Huge, huge new products, probably some of the largest product releases we've done in the company's history. And we've done it essentially without missing a beat. So
yep.
We're just going to keep that pace of innovation going on, and couldn't be prouder of our customer facing as well as our product teams.
I agree. Yeah, this is an exciting time at VMware for the technology. Of course, I say exciting in the sense that it's good to be at a company that does so many good things globally. It's certainly not good that we're having this problem, but I'm glad to know that when this is happening, I work for a company that not only provides cool technology that can really help people in this time, but is also doing really good things internally. So Pat, thanks for all you do for us as employees, but also, you know, as a consumer as well. Thank you for all you're doing for everybody in this time right now.
Well, thank you. And you guys are great. Love getting on your show. So thanks for giving me the opportunity to speak to all of your listeners today.
Anytime. Open door policy.
Thanks, Pat.
Thanks, Pat. All right. Well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this in all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to William Lamb, Brian Madden, and Pat Gelsinger for joining us this week. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now.
Virtually speaking, we're pretty important together.